Running a business shouldn't feel like surviving a software group project. One app for accounting, another for inventory, another for sales, and somehow none of them talk to each other. That's where Odoo comes in, an all-in-one business management software that brings every part of your business together, from sales and accounting to inventory and marketing, all in one powerful platform. No messy integrations, no bouncing between tabs, and best of all, no spreadsheets. Stop managing software and start managing your business with one unified system. Try for free today at odoo.com/iHeartRadio. That's odoo.com/iHeartRadio.
This Father's Day at Lowe's, we have extra big deals for a very limited time, so you can get Dad the gift he's been wishing for. Get a free select Craftsman, DeWalt, or Kobalt battery when you buy a select combo kit. Plus, save $90 on a Kobalt 24-volt battery string trimmer and leaf blower combo kit. Now $129. Our best lineup is here at Lowe's. Valid through 6/15 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
Today on The Grave Talks, part 2 of How Haunted is Chillingham Castle? A conversation with Rob Kirkup. The castle itself, was it a residence for people over the years for, you know, some obviously not regular people? Would it have been used or people as a place where people lived, or maybe kings, queens resided there from time to time throughout the year? And then how do they also use it to torture people? You know, it seems like you would have it be one thing or the other. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So when it was first built, it was a home. It was a manor house. And King Edward I stayed there in 1298. And one of the bedrooms is called the Edward I room. In 1344, there was a need to make it, suitable for battle, suitable for it to withstand attack. And it was given a license to do so in 1344, and it was turned into a castle, which was no longer designed to be a home. It was designed to defend against invading Scots. And then as the years went by and England and Scotland were no longer at war, then it reverted back to its former use as a home. But for a period of time, it was a home. Then it wasn't, and then it was. And it is now, to a degree. I mean, people stay there now, but its main purpose today is a visitor attraction and somewhere that people can go and do paranormal investigations or go on a ghost walk. Chillingham Castle is marketed as being a scary haunted castle. That's why I think most people go today.
And I would think with it sitting empty for so long, they had to have done quite a bit to even be able to have people go in it.
Yeah. When it first, it got bought by Sir Humphrey Wakefield, who still owns it today. And they had to do an awful lot of work. I think they had to remove literally over a ton of pigeon poo.
Ooh.
Because it had just been left.
Yeah.
It was full of animals. It was full of wild birds. And it was in no fit state to be anything. So they had to do an awful lot of work to get it to a point where it could open it as the castle it is today. There's a bit of a period from in the 1980s when it was bought through to the very early 2000s where I think it was just completely under the radar. I think it was there, but it was in a period, there was a period of time it took to get it to a place where it could be opened. And then I think it did open, but I think it only really started getting visitors and captured people's imagination when it started to get a bit of exposure about the ghost stories. Because it's in the middle of nowhere. You'd have to be going to Chillingham Castle to go to Chillingham Castle. It's not somewhere you're going to go past otherwise.
Now, do you think John Sage, you don't know for sure if he was a real person or has he just kind of become his own legend?
If you had a gun to my head and said, what do you think, get off the fence? I would say, and like I hate to say this because I'm in the business of ghost stories and stuff, but one thing I try and do this on my podcast as well, is that I try and be fair and I don't try and pass things off as real if I don't believe they are. I would say John Sage is almost certainly a modern invention. It pains us to say that, but I suspect that is the case.
But it does make some sense to me because horrific things happen there. Somebody horrific things. Somebody oversaw that. I couldn't imagine the person who takes on that job, but somebody did. I don't know how such horrific things could happen to so many people at a location, and the energy and the horror of it all. How can that not leave an imprint on the location itself? You know what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean. And it's the place where, I mean, as I said before, I've done an awful lot of paranormal investigations. It's the place where the most convincing thing that's ever happened to me on a paranormal investigation occurred. It is one of those places that I think can turn a skeptic into a believer, or somebody can go along not even thinking about the paranormal and something will happen that will scare the devil out of them.
How many times have you investigated there?
Two. I've only been twice. I have approached them with a view to try and get in a third time, but it's so popular. And with the paranormal event companies that we have now, it's so expensive to get in because everybody wants to do it. So I've done it twice. I did it in 2005 and I did it in 2015, 10 years later.
And in 2005, that one, I listened to that episode. I thought that was really interesting because I think there was a caretaker there. Was his name Bob?
Bob, yeah.
But it sounds like he said he talked to the spirits there and he kind of seemed to be in touch with them, didn't he?
Yeah. So I guess, like, my attitude when I do anything is question everything. Like, I'll regularly get emails. I always appreciate anybody getting in touch to say that they've had something happen to them. But that's their truth. That's mm-hmm. their evidence. That's their proof. Just because I try so hard to try and rationalize everything, that won't change my opinion about whether something like ghosts are real or not. But when we went along to Chillingham that December night in 2005, and when we got there, the only member of staff was Bob. He was putting up a Christmas tree, and he said, oh, hi, I'm Bob. And we said, hello, Bob. And he said, I talked to them, you know. And I said, sorry, what? And he said, oh, the ghosts. I can speak to them. And I'm like, oh, okay, Bob. Immediately thinking, you know, like, this guy sounds crazy. I don't know whether he was joking. It's like I'd never met him before. I didn't really know what to make of what he was saying, but I didn't believe him because why should I? This is a guy I've never met before. So we went off and did our investigation, but like 4 hours later, nothing had happened. So I'm like, we're going to have to get Bob and see if he can make something happen. So I'm like, Bob, and he was in his element. He wanted to be part of the team and he was taking us room to room and saying, oh, he's saying the spirit of such and such has just entered the atmosphere. And he was describing things that none of us could see, none of us could feel or hear. And we would say, can you make them do something? And he'd be like, oh, they're fading away. And I'm like, oh, typical. And then we got to the final room that we did that night. It was like 4 o'clock. It was about 3 o'clock in the morning, something like that. And I'm thinking, I've got to drive us all home. So we're going to have to leave soon. And I was just about to say, Bob, this has been great. Going to have to go. And he said, The ghost of a young boy has just came into the room. We were in the chapel, sitting in the pews, and he was stood at the front talking to us. He said, the ghost of a boy called Eric has just come into the room. He's about 13 or 14. He said, the tragic thing about Eric is he doesn't know he's dead. And he's wandering the castle looking for his parents, but they were murdered here and he doesn't know that. And then he said, what Eric likes to do is let people know he's around by doing his party piece, by playing tricks on them. And in this room, the doorway, there was no door. It was a big, thick, heavy curtain from floor to ceiling. And he said, what Eric likes to do is move the curtain. And no sooner had Bob finished talking that this curtain slowly started moving into the room towards us, almost as if there was somebody at the other side with two hands pushing it, slowly, bit by bit, with purpose. And we knew it was moving into the room because the bottom of the curtain wasn't touching the floor anymore. It was raised. All of us could see this. And I was sitting furthest to the side, so I could see behind the curtain. There was nobody there. Everybody in the room, everybody in the castle was in that room. It did it. It slowly went level again, and then it did it again. And then it stopped, and it didn't move at all. And it's just a curtain moving, but Bob told us what was going to happen, and then it happened. This rocked my belief system to its core. Like, I obsessed over this for months. Yeah. To be fair, I'm still talking about it now, 20 years on. Over 20 years now. It was unbelievable. I unfairly dismissed Bob as making stuff up.
Mm-hmm.
I won't pretend otherwise. Bob was telling us that there was people with us, but there was no evidence, there was no proof. Then something happened, and he knew it was going to happen. He told us exactly what was going to happen, and it happened. Blew my mind, unbelievable. I would love to have seen a ghost or that have said something, but this curtain was enough. That was more than we could have ever wished for. We still talk about it now.
And it would be strange, you know, for Bob, because I could see how you would have that impression of him, because here he is alone in this castle with a very interesting, to put it politely, history. And then he says, oh, I talk to them. Well, of course you do, Bob. You are here by yourself all the time. But then to have that happen at the end of the night and you can't explain it, that's very interesting to me.
It was mind-blowing. It was unbelievable. And I've spoken to a lot of people since who've experienced things at Chillingham. I regularly get emails or letters from people who have been to Chillingham and had something happen that they can't explain. And I get it, because I went to Chillingham and that happened to us. I went back in 2015, and as you say, I think the first ever like bonus episode or Patreon episode I put together was Chillingham Castle, so I won't spoil it if anybody wants to go and listen to it. But I was so hoping that that curtain would move again. Spoiler alert, it doesn't. But it was it's just an incredible place. Yeah, I'm so fortunate to live so close to it.
Bob was not there when you went back the next time?
No, Bob wasn't there. By the time I went back, I think the ghost event companies had started to creep in, and Chillingham had realised that it would be more profitable for them to start running their own ghost hunts than just let, like the first time I went, I paid them a bit of money and went in and it wasn't expensive. But by the time I went back, Chillingham and a whole host of other places with similar histories had started to realise that there was more money to be had by running their own. So the second time I went back, there was a guy who worked for the castle as the castle's ghost hunt person who was essentially taking us around. He was part of our team. Bob wasn't there. There was no Bob the second time, sadly.
Did you feel a difference when you went the first time as opposed to the second time? I think whenever you would go there, just knowing the history alone and being there at night and it's dark and you can't always see things around you and behind you. And, you know, I tend to work myself up a little bit when I know the history and it's like, this could be really scary. Anything could happen at any moment. But did you find it more intense the first time you went?
It's really hard to answer that question without retrospectively factoring in what happened the first time I went. I would say the first time I went, we were very excited. We were a little bit anxious, but 4 hours passed by with nothing happening at all before we added Bob to our team. The second time we went, was a very different atmosphere from the off. Our ghost hunt almost didn't happen the second time because when we got there, the castle was on fire.
Which wasn't a great start. Yeah, because I was like, how the heck? You line up a night to go there and it just happens to be on fire?
Yeah, it was on fire. We got there and there was fire engines everywhere. And we're thinking, what on earth's happening here? And it wasn't a bad fire. But in the cafe, where you can go and buy a cup of coffee and some food during the day, they've got a big open fireplace. And it was a January night and it was freezing cold. And somebody had lit a fire and the chimney had caught fire. Oh. So when we got there, the thing that we were told, we might not be able to do it. And I think that settled our nerves a little bit because we'd started to convince ourselves that we weren't going to do it. And then when we were told we could, I think some of the anticipation, some of the excitement had maybe fizzled away a little bit. And it just didn't set our night off the way that maybe we hoped. But by the time we got into the rooms and we thought, oh, hang on, we're doing it. Chillingham Castle, and it was a different team. It was a different group of people. It was a very different night. I don't think anything will come close to how it felt that first time, though. Because it was a place... Chillingham Castle's a special, special place. And that first time in 2005, I think even if I went back tomorrow night, nothing's ever going to feel the same as it did the first time I went in, not knowing what to expect after dark.
And with that curtain situation, I mean, that was really paranormal. But it sounds like that first time too, you know, I think that was the first time where you heard footsteps behind you at one point. Your friend, his face was like his body's really, really cold on one side, not on the other side. So I think there was little things to me are big things like hearing footsteps. That's a pretty big deal. You know, it does seem like there were experiences that you had that first time as well.
Yeah, I think everything that first time pales into, like, it's just kind of forgotten behind the curtain moving. But yes, the first time, and indeed the second time, there were weird things that happened that if the curtain hadn't happened, we'd have probably been talking about it on the drive home, thinking, oh, what was that? Like the second time we went, things happened for sure. There was bangs and knocks, the kind of things that you try and rationalize and then you can't.
With it being more of a destination for paranormal investigators, you always have to wonder, is somebody creating that? Is that truly paranormal? You don't know. The first time you were there, though, that was a different time.
First time I was there, that curtain was genuine. I even drove away thinking, immediately trying to work out what could have been. And I was thinking, could there have been somebody else in the castle? But there definitely wasn't. And then I was thinking, could they have rigged something up in the curtain where Bob pressed a button in his pocket and, like, I don't know, some kind of system moved the curtain? That wouldn't be too hard to do. But I was thinking, no, that definitely wouldn't have been the case either, because I've never heard of anybody else experiencing this. And the castle's got too much to lose by doing something that could so easily go wrong. So I tried to rationalize everything, and the curtain thing just keeps coming back. I mean, footsteps. If you go during the day and you hear footsteps, you think, well, it's probably somebody else elsewhere in the castle. But if you're there on a night time and you hear footsteps, you think, well, what could it possibly be? But yeah, I think the the first time we went, everything that happened was genuine, no doubt about it.
And I think that long ago, paranormal investigations weren't as popular as they are now, so it wouldn't really make a lot of sense for Bob to go to all the trouble to set up some kind of system, you know, where he's like some magician guy pressing a button. Like, what would that benefit? You know, there wasn't people in there every night doing paranormal investigations, and you're trying to get people to come back. It was just a different time.
Yeah, I mean, it was so easy for me to get an app. I sent them an email and just said, hiya, can I come and do a ghost hunt? They're like, yeah. And it was relatively inexpensive as well compared to how much it would cost to do the same thing today.
Where you live, too, there are just so many locations. Do you go out of England much in Great Britain? Do you go out of the area much? Or are you still kind of, there's so many locations you can go to there?
I'm spoilt for choice here in the northeast of England and beyond. I've done a lot in Edinburgh, north of the border in Scotland, which is a wonderful place. York is one of the cities that in the UK that's got a real reputation. It's got so many haunted locations. I've done a lot of ghost hunts there. I've never done a paranormal investigation outside of the UK. I'd love to. I've never had a need to yet, because with the places that we have and the history that we have, I don't think I'm ever going to run out of places to go and investigate. However, doing the podcast, I would love to jump on a plane or jump on a boat and go and do somewhere in another country and record all the audio and turn it into something really special. There's a guy who I've interviewed recently on my podcast, he's another lad from Newcastle called Rob Davies, and he's got a YouTube channel called Dead Air, and he's been all over the world doing ghost hunts at some really scary places on his own, and that's the kind of thing I'd love to get the opportunity to do. Life kind of gets in the way of us being able to put everything else in my life to one side and fly off somewhere, but there are some places overseas that I would love to do.
What is on your bucket list?
On my bucket list, places that I would love to do, I'd love to, if I could get in anywhere, Alcatraz, I would love to do, The Rock. I think just the idea of being cut off
from the mainland. Fascinating.
I'd love to do that. I went to Rome in Italy in 2019 and fell in love with the place. And I would love to spend a night in the Colosseum. That place, if somewhere on Earth is supposed to be haunted, the Colosseum has to be on that list.
Has to be. It would be interesting. It would be so interesting to be in a place like that alone at night, because, you know, you can't really pick up on activity. Like, I went to Alcatraz one day, but it's the middle of the day. There's just so many people. Well, I've been to the Colosseum, I think, 2 or 3 times now, and there's just so many people that you can't pick up on anything, because you can't even get a quiet moment to yourself. There's so many people around. But wouldn't it be crazy to be at Alcatraz or the Colosseum when it's quiet? It would be fascinating.
Yeah. I mean, the Colosseum would be, the fact that it's nearly 2,000 years old, and 1 million animals were killed there, and around 400,000 human beings were killed there, all in the name of entertainment. It's such a tragic place. Speaking of tragic places, I would love to do Pompeii on my own after dark, just to experience it. That's one of the most amazing places I've ever been in my life. And the final place I would put on my bucket list, just to keep the list short, would be the Sedlec Ossuary in Cutnahora, which is about half an hour outside of Prague, and it's known as the Bone Church because inside of the Sedlec ossuary are chandeliers, chairs, and other decorative objects made of human bones that were dug out of the graveyard. There's somewhere between 40,000 and 70,000 human remains used in decoration inside that building.
Isn't that something used for decoration?
Got a chandelier made of every bone in the human body.
It is so morbid that somebody even thought of that. I am going to make a chandelier and I want to use every bone.
It's incredible. It's mind blown. Yeah, look it up. I did an episode on it and I emailed the, because it's still a working church today. And I sent an email saying, hiya, I'm going to do a podcast episode. And I got a very, very angry email back from them. And I didn't reply. And then I got an even angrier email back from a different member of staff as well. They were not happy that their building is being talked about in with regards to the paranormal.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Now, I think you do a great job with this podcast, and you can listen wherever you listen to podcasts, I'm assuming.
Yeah, it's everywhere.
Yeah, I listen on Spotify, and it's How Haunted. And that's what I really appreciate about your podcast is I love the history. And so that to me is a really important element. And you do such a great job with that. And you tell the story so well.
Thank you so much.
But I really appreciate you taking the time to chat with me today. It was very interesting.
No, it's been my pleasure. It's always nice to have the opportunity to talk to anybody who's willing to listen to me talk about my podcast and the places that I've been, because often my podcast is usually just me talking to a microphone on my own. So it's always a joy to speak to other people. So thank you so much for having us on. It's been really nice.
Please come back anytime.
You definitely will.
And that wraps up our conversation with Rob Kirkup about Chillingham Castle. You can listen to his podcast, How Haunted, wherever you listen to podcasts. And visit his website at how-haunted.com. If you'd like access to all of our episodes, including the archive and advance episodes without commercials, then become a Gravekeeper. Sign up at Apple Podcasts or go to patreon.com/thegravetalks. I'm Carol Hughes, and for all of us at The Grave Talks, thank you for listening.